From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the ninth day of December 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. Colin Peterson, former U.S. representative from the state of Minnesota, who at one point in time headed the agricultural committees in Washington, D.C., will be here. We caught up with him earlier today at the Strategic Farm Marketing Seminar in Champaign. And then as we close out our time together, we'll talk about the weather forecast, too, that with Mike Tenurum from T-Storm, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day at $5.91¾, 4½ cents higher. The May contract at $5.93¼, up 4¼. And December futures, $5.52¼, 2½ cents lower for the day. January contract at $12.64¼, up 3½. The March at $12.72¼, up 3½. And November beans at $12.47¾, up 3¾. So the only contract among those six as a loser was the new crop December corn. Bean meal futures at $3.59.70, up 2.50. The bean oil for the day at $54.85, 70 cents lower. Wheat futures soft red, $7.76¾, 17¾ of a cent lower. The hard red down 15½. It settled at $7.96½. Spring wheat was also down 13 cents today at $10.22½. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $137.80, down 87½. The feeders at $164.07, 67½ cents higher, and lean hogs at $77.82½, $1.77½ higher. That 400 pounds. Crude oil for the afternoon at $70.76 a barrel. That's down $1.59. Diesel fuel or heating oil is a penny and a half lower at $2.24.6 per gallon. And wholesale price of gasoline today at $2.12.2, down 2¢. Natural gas is just about unchanged at $3.81½. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 35,813 is about 67 points higher. Matt Bennett now joins us from agmarket.net to discuss what's happened in Chicago. Hi, Matt. Thank you for being with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
What did take place in Chicago? I've been busy throughout the day in Champaign at the Strategic Farm Marketing Seminar. We'll hear more about that in just a bit. But what took place in Chicago?
Well, you know, essentially you had the report out. And as we all know, December report isn't always a real eventful affair. That's essentially what we saw happen here today. There was no change as far as corn or soybeans was concerned. You know, the wheat balance sheet actually added a few bushels, nothing extravagant, but, you know, carry out, I guess, for the U.S. went from, 583, I think, last month where we were. Expectations were for a small increase, and we went up to 598. Corn and soybean carryouts for the U.S. were exactly the same. Soybean carryout for the world was just a shade under last month at 102, and then world corn carryout was just a shade more, I guess, than last month. So, you know, it's interesting to kind of look at, but essentially the market just kind of shrugged it off because there wasn't anything to talk about. You know, and beans were a little bit higher on the day, and actually corn was a little bit higher in the front months and lost a little bit of traction in some spread trade.
And USDA also did not change the season average cash price for either corn or soybeans. Still $12.10 for soybeans and $5.45 for corn. However, as you made note, they did raise carryout for wheat. You'd expect them to maybe lower the price given that for the season, but they did not. That went up to $7.05. Wheat still leading in the marketplace potentially?
That's a good question. I mean, wheat actually had a rough day, you know, which would maybe be expected with a little bit of an increase there. We lost double digits. As far as Chicago was concerned, July wheat was down 15 cents, settled at 775. So, you know, back under that $8 level handily, and quite frankly, you're going to be a little bit worried about, you know, continued weakness, I think, especially in the Chicago market. And then you look over at Kansas City, you know, for July wheat, you're down, you know, 15 cents again. So definitely took the shine off the wheat market a little bit. And it looks to me that the soybean market was able to kind of distance itself, from moving hand in hand. I guess from my vantage point, it was very interesting to see, for instance, new crop corn on the day down 3 cents, whereas new crop soybeans were actually up 4 3/4. That's not the settle, but that's the close. So very interesting to see those two dynamics as well.
Yeah, the wheat, of course, calendar year, marketing year started in July, so they've got now 6 months behind them, and the season's average cash price, based on a lot of higher prices of making some sales. Are you concerned that wheat will pull down the marketplace over the next several weeks going into the end of the year?
No, I'm not so sure that I think that's what you're going to see happen. I think that what you'll see happen is is that the wheat market's going to kind of trade on its own. This time of year, it's a long ways out, and you're not going to be actually battling for any winter wheat acres. I mean, that's already been decided. You're going to be battling for corn acres, soybean acres. And so, I think that corn and soybeans will probably be able to distance themselves a little bit more from wheat than what we've seen over the last several months.
And how do you see the battle for corn and soybean acres taking place? Which one will be making the bigger push?
Well, that's a really good question, because, you could say that we're going to have to rally one or the other to be able to pick up some acres. We obviously know that with a 340 carryout on soybeans, that's not burdensome by any stretch of the imagination, and with a 1.5-ish carry out on corn, 1.493, that's certainly not, that's tight on a stocks to use ratio, relatively speaking, compared to what we were used to. With soybeans, we've run such tight levels over the years that, running a 7% to 8% stocks to use isn't anything near as tight as what we saw, just a few months ago. And so I think relatively speaking, you've got to think that this corn situation is going to need the acres, so to speak, more so, than maybe soybeans will. But that can be accomplished either by corn rallying or beans falling. So, obviously South American weather is going to play into this. Crush margins have been good. Ethanol grind margins have been good. There's a lot of different things playing into this, but ultimately it's going to be very interesting to see how South American weather plays out, because I think that it could have a pretty big impact.
Will crude play much of a role? It's backed off of its highs by, 10 bucks or 13 or something like that. However, corn and soybeans have remained pretty steadily strong.
Yeah, I mean, crude's definitely going to have an impact, but at the same time, whenever you took the crude oil market down $10 the day after Thanksgiving, and the corn market actually closed the day higher, it kind of shows you that there was a fair amount of meat on the bone, I guess, with ethanol margins, to where people weren't so worried about, ethanol, I guess, grind falling off significantly that they just ran to the exit. So there's no question that energy markets are going to be something we're going to look at very closely. I mean, I'm watching natural gas, of course, because of corn inputs especially. A lot of these have fell off of the highs that we saw previously, but it's going to be important to see if we continue to see a downgrade in prices, because if we don't, and we stabilize, if not move higher, I think that'll be overall supportive, especially for the corn market.
Well, I do want to know what you think producers ought to be doing with corn that they have at the elevator at this point. Do they need to think about marketing that, despite the fact it's already paid for through January?
Here's the thing about it, Todd. If it's at the elevator, they're not going to get, I guess, a push, like they might get if it was in the bin at home. If it's in the elevator, they need to pay close attention to the fact that at a lot of these facilities, corn's worth more now than what it is out 3-4 months. And so right now, you look at the board, for instance, you're at 588.5 on December corn was the close, and you look at July corn, 591.25, and that's actually the biggest spread we've seen for the week, pretty much. We've been running neck and neck, if not an inverse at times. So the market, the basis, everything is telling you that the market wants your corn now. That doesn't mean that you're not going to see opportunities later, but it certainly means that now is a fantastic opportunity. So what I've been telling people is it's a fact that they want the corn now. We don't know how bad they're going to want it later. I personally think that a person should hold on to some corn for later on, but if I was going to try to decide which corn I would let go of, is it going to be the corn out of the bin or is it going to be the corn at the elevator? I'd probably let go of the elevator corn first.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
That's Matt Bennett. He is at agmarket.net. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Colin Peterson now joins us. He helped to usher through at least four farm bills and was the lead on a couple of them. Of course, the chairs usually are from the minority and majority and minority sides. So there are four people, usually two from the Senate, two from the House. You played both roles over those four. Do they differ very much when you're in the majority or minority?
Yeah, it does, because when you're in the majority, you can set the agenda, you know, and so it makes it a little bit easier to kind of move it in the direction you want. But at the end of the day, my experience is, and I was chairman in 2008, and I was ranking in 13 and in 18. If, you know, the biggest role that I had was giving up the things I really wanted in order to make something be bipartisan. That was my role, to figure out what we could do that everybody could get behind and stay behind. And so sometimes I had to give up stuff that I didn't want to give up. I had to support stuff I didn't want to support, because that's what I had to do to make it work. At the end of the day, if you don't have both parties behind something, it's not going to stick. You know, and it's tough. I mean, it's, you got all these regional interests, you got political interests, you got partisan interests. It is a very difficult job. And that was my main role, was to be the grease behind the scenes to keep this working together. You know, and with Pat Roberts this last time, Pat will tell you that it was me in that conference committee that helped get where we needed to be.
Well, I've got some questions about the 2018 Farm Bill, and we'll get to 2023 and what your thoughts are. Although I found it interesting that you tell the folks here at the Strategic Farm Marketing Conference that weren't sure really whether there would be a 2023.
Yeah, well, I said that publicly a number of times, and that's been a question in D.C. is, can we do another bill? You know, the last two have failed on the floor, and we had to rework them. So, but also, a lot of the current law is permanent, so you don't need a farm bill except for conservation, rural development, you know, some of the other market access programs and that sort of stuff. Is you need a farm bill for that, broadband and so forth. But the rest of it, you know, crop insurance, food stamps, all that stuff is locked in, the commodity programs, you know. So it's not as big of a deal as it used to be, because we've made these programs permanent. But it's best for agriculture if you can do a bill, get everybody together, and try to keep a coalition for the next 5 years. You know.
On the commodity bills, ARC and PLC particularly, yeah. In the 2018 bill, of the four, majority and minority, you were the only one that wanted to deal with the loan rates and managed to get those raised, but not very much.
No, because and I've tried that for years. So now this is a discussion that's really bubbling up right now, loan rates. And people have been, I was on a call with the Southerners the other day, and they're really starting to, the Southerners are wanting to raise the reference prices. Cost money. But it costs less money if the prices are up, you know. So there's a possibility it could happen, but you know, it has its downside risk too, because if you raise the, you know, they want to go to 10.50 on soybeans and, you know, 6.50 on wheat. So if you lock in those prices in the reference price, they're probably never going to come down. So what does that do to the export markets, you know? So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. It's still early in the process. There's going to be hearings next year, and we will hear in those hearings what people want to do. But, you know, I think there's a chance they might raise them this next time.
Yeah, so important for those who are listening and remember LDPs, the loan deficiency payments, because the loan rate is the LDP, yeah. And if you raise that up, it essentially puts a bottom in the marketplace.
You put a bottom under the market, you know, and that's what I've tried to do over the years. Like, for example, I tried to raise the loan rate on barley. And the issue with barley is you've got malting barley and you've got feed barley. And Bill O'Connor, who was the head Republican staffer, wanted, you know, he did not want to have a barley loan rate above the feed barley. Well, so up in our part of the world where we grow malting barley, we couldn't get people to grow it because there was no protection, see? Same thing with oats. You know, Quaker Oats comes in and they're complaining they haven't got enough oats production. I said, well, you know, you guys aren't paying enough, you know. So all of this stuff is a two-edged sword, but what we try to do on the committee is balance it out so that everybody can live with whatever the final thing is. And that's basically the main thing that you do in those conference committees is trying to work it out.
And I suppose the way the companies got around not having a malting barley LDP was they simply price barley off of wheat, more or less.
Pretty much. You know, I mean, so you end up with, you know, malting barley, you know, it costs more money to raise, you know, and it the problem is if you have a disaster, it ends up being feed barley, and, you know, that's what the issue is. But we're having trouble getting enough malting barley grown, and we're having to import it from Canada. You know, and that's not a good situation, you know. So,
as I say, no barley, no beer.
Huh? That's right.
Hey, so back to the 1050 number for soybeans, because the South has begun to grow enough soybeans that they're really interested in it. That may be a place that the Midwest and the South can come together.
Oh, yeah. We're starting this Midwest Coalition, and part of the reason we're doing this is that they've got the Southwest Council. And what we intend to do is work together, you know, on a lot of these different issues. Because it's kind of the, you know, and that's the role I played in Congress. I mean, I had as many friends in Southern agriculture as I had in the Midwest. And I cultivated those friendships. And so in this last election, I had cotton farmers and rice farmers come up and campaign for me. It didn't do any good, but that's, you know, they understood that we all are in this together and we have to work together. And so, you know, our interests come together. In the historic difference between the South and the North goes back to the 2002 Farm Bill. And when Gingrich gave Larry Combest $53 billion more money to spend on the Farm Bill. And then they went in there and the Southerners killed the bill because they didn't think they were getting enough, and then they kind of went overboard. And that's what got this thing kind of out of whack, you know. And the peanuts people get a double payment limitation, all this sort of thing. You know, so we all got to live together. We all got to come up with something that works for us and works for our area. And I think it's going to take some effort to work between the North and the South to make this happen, you know.
Well, thank you so much. Anything final from you as the last blue dog Democrat, I suppose?
Well, it's just troubling what's going on. I mean, you know, when I started in politics, the Democrats in my district were like me. Now, that's not the case, you know, and I would never get supported in my area with my politics. And I'm not going to change. I mean, I could have been a Republican. I was offered all kinds of stuff to switch parties. You know, but I'm just stubborn old Norwegian, you know, and so, you know, I think we were better off when we had a bunch of blue dog Democrats, we had a bunch of moderate Republicans that could come together and force everybody to where we needed to be. We don't have that anymore. It's a problem.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
That's Colin Peterson. He's a former U.S. representative from the state of Minnesota, spoke to us earlier today at the Strategic Farm Marketing Seminar. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You know, if you're interested in farm policy, don't forget to join us tomorrow at 11 a.m. Central Time for another in the Farm Doc Illinois Farm Economics Series webinars. It'll last for an hour, and this time we will talk about farm policy. Jonathan Kappas will lead that. He's University of Illinois Farm Policy Specialist. You can join us again at 11 o'clock. Visit farmdocdaily.illinois.edu and look under webinars or IFAS to sign up for tomorrow's free webinar. And once you're signed up, of course, this is the last one. But if there are more, you'll get another email about them. It's the Farm Doc Daily Illinois Farm Economics Summit webinar series. We'll wrap up tomorrow at 11 a.m., just 1 hour long, talking about agricultural farm policy. Should be a great discussion. I hope you will join us. It's absolutely free to register at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look for the link under webinars. Let's check the weather forecast now. Mike Tenora joins us from T-Storm. Thanks, Mike, for being with us. I'd like to talk about Brazil today, from one end of the nation to the other, from north to south. And if you could, would you start in southern Brazil for me, please?
Yes, that sounds great. Those southern areas are in need of rain. We haven't seen very much since late October, and the forecast looks pretty dry going forward. We will see some storms there Sunday and Monday, but we're only looking for about 1 inch of rain with that event. After we get beyond that, it dries out again, and that means that the next two-week period might only see around 1 inch of rain. Now, even though 1 inch might sound like a lot to somebody listening to us today, you have to keep in mind that 1.5 inches is normal of every week in southern Brazil. And we all know that you get really good crops when you have above normal rainfall. You could get 2 to 3 inches of rain per week, and that would be an ideal situation. Instead, we're only looking at 1 inch over the next week or two, and that's way below normal. And when you combine that with how dry it's been since late October, it starts to spell out the potential for a problem. First crop corn will be pollinating later on this month. And even though soybeans aren't as sensitive as corn at the moment, they'll eventually need some rain later this month and certainly in January. So that southern 40 to 50% of corn and soybeans in Brazil are at risk of too much dryness going forward.
And how are conditions in the middle and northern parts of Brazil?
Well, they've been seeing a lot of rain. In Mato Grosso, which is the number one soybean producing state in the world, they had their wettest November in more than 42 years. And that just tells you they've seen a lot of rain, over 11 inches across the state. And that state is about as big as Oklahoma and Texas combined. So we saw a lot of rain in November. It's still raining here in December, and the forecast looks pretty wet going forward. We're looking for 100% to 200% of normal rainfall over the next couple of weeks. And that's primarily because a number of cool fronts will move into the region, then slowly dissipate, and they will tend to interact with that muggy air mass and help thunderstorms to form. So we need to keep an eye on that to a lesser extent than southern Brazil, but it can be argued that they are receiving a little bit too much of a good thing in the form of that heavy rain. So we'll just keep watching that and see how it pans out.
Thanks, Mike. I'll talk with you again next week.
Yeah, sounds great, Todd.
Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather. He joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.